So you're welcome to the second episode of the 2018 season of Rebel Yell. Once again, David Kent joined, this time solo by Kevin Galvin, because Colin Cuddy, he went on a little scouting trip, shall we say, this week. Kev, how are we?
I'm very good. The squad went over to Manchester and Colin got as far as London, so yeah, he's doing all right.
Kind of got lost along the way. There might have been a conflict yeah. there somewhere. Anyway, it's been a busy week for us. It's been a busy enough week in the league. Obviously starting last Friday night with the tragic news that Liam Miller had lost his battle with cancer. There's not much that we can say to add to the tributes, really, that have been paid this week. Obviously, he was buried yesterday. We were recording this on a Tuesday. He was buried in Ovens yesterday. Kev, not much as we can say, apart from just a major, major loss to Irish football.
Yeah, of course, it was asked to do an obituary for the paper last weekend, and I found it very hard to come up with the right words. I suppose the one thing that I thought about was his international debut at a time where there weren't that many Cork footballers. Like, we take it for granted now with David Moyler and John Egan, Conor Howrahan, you know, these kind of guys coming up and playing for the Irish team. But Miller is a really outstanding talent at underage, and from all reports seemed to be an all-around fantastic guy. And I suppose the really sad thing is that, you know, he's left behind a wife and three children, and really the football is completely irrelevant when, you know, that's what matters, really, you know, the family aspect of it.
Yeah, obviously best friends with Mark McNulty, the goalkeeper, playing with him on the range of Ballincollig. City had to focus quite quickly after his death on Friday because they had a Presence Cup on Sunday, and after 45 minutes it wasn't really looking too well. 2-0 down thanks to goals from Ronan Murray. Heavy snowfall in Oriel Park and all across the country on Sunday made conditions quite difficult. They didn't have an Orange football ready at Oriel, which I found a bit strange given that there had been snow in the north all week and there was some more snow forecasted. But City did manage to turn around in the second half, and quite an astonishing turnaround, really. 4 goals in 45 minutes. Amazing performance, one that Liam Miller probably would have been proud of, and it's nice to get hands on another trophy, Kev.
Yeah, and I suppose we were talking before, in last week's podcast, we were talking about it as to how much of an impact it would have. I mean, to come back from 2-0 down against a team that will probably be your title rivals and have been historically, to score 4 goals in the second half in their home ground, especially given the fact that, you know, you had your starting goalkeeper who was on personal leave, and you'd number the kind of main first team players weren't playing when they did click into gear. Our front four looks to be absolutely phenomenal, and if they can gel in the same way they did in the second half in Oriel last week, we're not going to be stuck for goals this season, that's for sure.
No, the goal was obviously released earlier on today in a video clip from Dundalk FC TV. We'll get onto that a bit more in a second, but what struck me most from those clips is the link-up play already between Kieran Sadnier and Graham Cummins. If those two can get kind of repeat that every week in the league, we're going to absolutely destroy this division. Obviously, Sadnier himself getting on the score sheet with quite a wonderful 30-yard strike. Fantastic goal. And to me, it was just maybe Dundalk gave him 2 yards of space, 3 yards max. And with the off-season he's had, and obviously he grabbed a few goals towards the end of last season, he's got to be a huge player, isn't he?
Yeah, and it was one of the interesting things about the most kind of optimistic thing that I saw from those goals, which just came out the other day, was I can't remember, was it Sean Horror or Stephen Folan? I think it was Chris Shields, actually, for Cummins' goal. And the ball is down the left. I think it was Sadlier put the cross across for him. And you just see Cummins coming up against Shields, gets on the blind side of Shields, and then just a little bit of pace, like a little bit of extra step, gets him just ahead of Shields to finish. And it was a lovely finish, but it was the movement that we saw against Waterford, obviously, which was kind of a nothing game. But the especially against Chris Shields, who, you know, is a very well-respected defender in our league, for Cummins just to be able to get himself in a position to get on the blind side and then just at the perfect timing to just nip in at the right moment and score. Sadlier's goal obviously was a stunner. Great, lovely little finish by McNamee with the header as well. So it's just four really excellent goals, and it's fantastic that the goals are being shared around to give them all a little bit of a boost and to get them all you know, feeling confident about playing with each other.
Yeah, and like, if that front four is comfortably the best in the league, if all four of them are firing, even if half of them are firing, It's going to be very hard to stop us. I won money on the game on Sunday because I backed Cork City. One of the Rebel Radio team didn't. One of the Rebel Radio team backed Dundalk. It wasn't me. It wasn't you. So that's a hint as to who bet on Dundalk.
A very small clue there.
Why are your angry tweets in that direction?
It's very funny though, because I listened back to our last year's podcast.
Yeah.
And we were playing, I think the week we were playing Galway at home, and Colm was tipping us for a 1-1 draw at home to Galway. And I just distinctly remember at the start of last season, Colm being outrageously pessimistic.
Yeah.
Like, expected us to draw pretty much every single game. Was like, oh, I'll take a point to Bray away. Oh, you know, I'd take a point to Limerick at home when Limerick weren't firing. I'd take a point at home to Drogheda when we went out and beat them 5-0. You know, he's not exactly one to have much faith in the team, to be fair to him. But
cautious,
cautious cuts. But City were 3-1, which were very, very high odds going into that game. So I know the fact that it's pre-season friendly and the conditions and everything, but 3-1 for Cork City to beat Dundalk when they haven't actually lost to them in, I think it was the last 7 games.
One loss in 11 games now to them. One loss in the last 10 before Sunday.
Yeah, and they've won all of their President's Cups against them. 3 President's Cups, 3 wins. So,
yeah.
It was clever money to put on City, and I suppose, look, it's just a mental block. I went on the Dundalk forum just to have a quick nose for research purposes, of course. And they're all going mad at Stephen Kenny. They're all going mad that he can't seem to get John Caulfield's number. It was the other way around in 2014 and 2015, and we really seem to have turned it around. And look, I was interested to see that Dundalk took off some of their new signings, which I thought was kind of interesting. They hadn't played well at all in the second half, and we kind of speculated about their transfer business and how successful it could potentially be. But it was not a good day for Dundalk, and. I wonder, Dave, you might be able to answer this, how much of a mental effect that could have going into the opening couple of games of the season.
Well, I think all the fans and all the team beforehand would have been like, yeah, okay, it would be great to win it, but if it isn't, it's not the end of the world. But the thing is, when you're 2-0 up on, again, your main rivals for the season, there's no dispute in that it is going to be Dundalk and Cork City again this season. For Stephen Kenny, especially a team of Stephen Kenny's historic 3-in-a-row winners, to concede 4 goals in 45 minutes of play. No matter what way you want to paint the game itself, oh, it's only a friendly, 4 goals in 45 minutes is huge psychologically. That, like, and even his comments after the game as well, obviously they took off Christian Adorhan, and then Robbie Benson had flu, and Chris Shields had pneumonia, and everyone had pneumonia, so that's why Dundalk played so badly. It's a recurring theme with Stephen Kenny at this stage, that Cork City are never the better team. But that's beside the point. To concede 4 times in 4 minutes for any game is embarrassing. And I don't know if Dundalk's American owners were at the President's Cup. I'm sure they've seen the results somehow. That's got to be a minor alarm bell. It was a huge alarm bell on the Oriel web, the Dundalk forum. And it's something we haven't really seen before, people questioning Stephen Kenny's management. But I think after conceding a goal every 10.5 minutes, that's going to bring up a lot of questions. If Dundalk start as poorly as they did last season, if they start as bad as they did last season, this season, you could start seeing some pressure. And if we repeat that kind of second half performance against them in 4 weeks' time, 5 weeks' time, when we visit Oriel again, like, this league could be over in a few weeks, I should say.
It's a pretty bold statement. One of the things I wanted to ask you is, you're talking about Stephen Kenny and him kind of coming under fire. One of the things that was said, I suppose, is the fact that he's not particularly gracious in defeat. He can't give kudos to the opposing side. It was kind of always excuses. Is that something now that is going to become an issue? Because obviously that was always the way he decided to treat things, but only now, because Dundalk aren't successful, people are kind of cluing into it, or maybe it's becoming. It's seen as being a negative as opposed to a positive.
I think it's on Sunday it was more of a... people were kind of more hyper aware of it because Cork City have had this block over Dundalk and over Stephen Kenny. As you mentioned, 9 wins out of 10 games and the one draw was the last minute equaliser in Turner's Cross in an ISL league. So during the time when Dundalk were beating us quite regularly, John Caulfield, always gracious in defeat. Yeah, he made the odd comment maybe about a decision he might have felt didn't go our way, but he was always gracious and always magnanimous. Whereas you compare that to Stephen Kenny, who has blamed anything and everything for his defeats to Cork City and even other teams as well. So you're looking at, we had the Chris Packett incident. We had the number of penalties that we got, which actually turned out to be less than the number of penalties Dundalk got. And I believe the following week was a Bray Wanderers game where the referees kind of decided to bite back and Bray Wanderers got two penalties. And he didn't really learn from that. He hasn't learned because no one's really called him up on it before. If he continues like it this season, when Dundalk aren't as successful, we've taken the last three trophies off them, you might see more and more media and journalists and press starting to go, listen, you're running out of excuses now. Whether that will happen remains to be seen. It depends on how Dundalk start. When we move into the news, we will. Starting with three of Cork City's opening seven fixtures will now be televised. Both games against Bohemians, which is the home game on March 2nd, and the away game on April 20th will be televised, and the Dundalk game in Ornell Park on March 9th is on Air Sport. You're quite happy to not be being able to visit for Dundalk and Bohemians. Why?
Because I think you always get treated like a pack animal whenever you go to either of those grounds, and also the facilities are completely subpar. I could see myself going to Bowes, potentially, maybe, just as a fan.
Yeah.
Like we did last year, when the stand was leaking, and there's a garden growing in the roof of the Des Kelly stand now at this stage. But Oriel is like, to have fans standing out under the freezing snow on crumbling concrete steps in the stadium of a club who have just, you know, have not been short of money in recent years. You know, to be using portaloos outside the back, I think it's really, really poor morally, if you want to say. I know there's no onus particularly on Dundalk to upgrade it, only for the fact that they might get into Champions League football in the future and obviously won't be up to scratch for that. But it just, I just think that the both of those grounds are in serious need of some sort of TLC. Daly are obviously is kind of transitional because nobody knows whether, you know, I mean, the talk is that there's supposed to be works done on it, but we don't know when that's going to happen and how long down the line that is. But like, it's in a shocking. I mean, the Jody stand is a lovely stand, but the other three are pretty much condemned. And I think it won't be a matter of time before that St. Peter's end is going to have to be closed because the stand is crumbling. There's the roof is looking pretty shaky. The floodlights are sticking up through. There's always a hazard there. I mean, they've already blocked off the upper air section of it, which we used to be able to go into. They've blocked that off now, and frankly, as an away, particularly when Shamrock Rovers come to town, as an away area, to be so close to the kind of most vocalised, perhaps most aggressive, maybe not aggressive is the right word, but the most antagonistic section of the Bose fans. You saw what happened during that Dublin derby a couple of years ago when it all just took one guy to jump out, and it's only a 20-yard sprint over to Rovers fans. You know, it's not like he has to get down the length of the pitch. It only takes you about 3 or 4 seconds to get from the Bose fans over to the away fans. I just think that the whole set up there at the moment is really, really subpar, and the same in Oriel. I think both of them really need to review. Not that the licensing system is going to put any particular onus on them to do that, but my own personal opinion, I think they should.
When you're looking at Oriel, when there was literally a dead mouse in between the seats on Sunday, like, that speaks for itself. In terms of Daly, man, they are getting the new stadium, the part of the government's plan for infrastructure that was released a couple of months or last month. Allocated some money to the Dublin City Council for Daly Mass redevelopment. Your point about the away fans is interesting because there was a game a few years ago where Cork City fans were put on the old tramway terrace, which, as as fans might know, it's opposite the Jody. It wasn't. It's not behind the other goal. It's opposite the Jody. And it was this, don't get me wrong, this was this horrible, wet and windy night. So at half-time, half of the Cork City fans sprinted across the tramway end to the Jody to go up into the where they used to put us in the Jody, which was at the far end, as you're looking at it now. So if you remember, I think it's 2005, we played them on Halloween, up that section. Whereas now you're looking at the Des Kelly. I mean, just basing it off last year, the game where Cork City could have won the league title, like, it was dangerously overcrowded. And I'd imagine that would be similar enough on Friday night against Shamrock Rovers. And as you say, it only takes one more on to jump the fence and sprint over. And then again, that's all the negative headlines that the league will have on the opening weekend. As we mentioned earlier, no TV coverage at all of the Presidents' Cup at the weekend.
Yeah, it's, look, we're going to be talking about it in a second with the, you know, City's games being announced live on TV. It's a real pity, particularly the fact that I think it's kind of, maybe not ironic is the word, but I think it's funny that the FAI can't even stream the game because the Wi-Fi coverage at Oriel Park is so poor. For a club that are winning that have been winning leagues, they've been in Europe, like, they should be providing that sort of basic infrastructure. It was a real opportunity missed by both TV companies and by the FAI. Yeah, Man United and Newcastle, which, fine, Newcastle won, but it was a shocking game of football. And, you know, the opportunity for... I could definitely see somebody who has a half interest in those teams flicking over to RT2 and seeing the comeback as it's going on. It would definitely pique some interest. You have the top two teams in the country. It's for a competition... For the first competition of the season, could you imagine the Community Shield not being televised in England? It'd be absolutely ludicrous, you know.
Even like in other sports as well, the GA National Leagues is essentially the same thing. It's a warm up for the main tournament, but that gets coverage every week. Obviously, different sport, different budgets. But like, imagine like that game was awful. I presume Newcastle and Man United by most accounts. But even like switching over to RT2 and seeing Oriel covered in snow. That's immediately someone like, ah, oh, this will be a bit of crack now. We'll have a look at this ball going everywhere. I know what people will be looking for. And look, 2-0, oh, it might flick back. Oh, it's 2-1, flick back again. Oh, geez, 2-2, we got a game in our hands here. So the fact that we didn't even have, I mean, fair play, the FAI did stream it the last couple of years because it was in Turner's Cross. But surely it must say something about, not even the licensing system, but just how shocking that this supposed major club's one of the top grounds in the country, that they can't stream from it, they can't cover their away fans, and there's not strong enough Wi-Fi for even some radio streams.
Yeah, and to be fair, I suppose Turner's Cross is the exception to the rule in terms of having internet that's acceptable. I mean, we know ourselves from doing the radio coverage, you can't rely on any of the Wi-Fi coverages around the grounds. The only one, perhaps, is Tala, which is probably good enough, and Turner's Cross, obviously, if you're in the press box, is good enough. I suppose it begs the question. I can understand why it was played at Oriel Park this year, but I think it gives me a greater understanding as to why the President's Cups for the last two seasons have been played in Turner's Cross. And I suppose as Dundalk, the more home games you can get, the more crowds you can get, the better off you are. So surely there's some sort of incentive there if they want to, if they get the League Cup or, an FAI Cup semi-final. I know that's probably a draw, but the League Cup final, certainly. The FAI obviously want them to be played at grounds that have the best kind of facilities. And, as you've seen, we got the League Cup in 2011. We got the President's Cup over the last 2 years. So, I suppose... If Cork City and Dundalk get to the President's Cup next year, I can see there being a very strong vote towards it being put back in Turner's Cross, because of the fact that, as we've seen, I don't know, has anybody here seen? We might talk about it in a second, but some of the improvements that have been made to Turner's Cross are going to make a massive difference.
On the topic of TV coverage and some broadcasting, we have the first six fixtures announced by RTE and AIR for the TV schedules. I'll run through them now. Obviously, Friday night, Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers is 7:30 on RTE. As we mentioned in the beginning, the 2nd of March, Cork City against Bohemians. The 9th of March, Dundalk against Cork City is on AIR. 23rd of March, Waterford against Shamrock Rovers on RTE. The 13th of April, Shamrock Rovers and Bohemians on AIR. and the 20th Bohemians and Cork City on Air Sport. At the official SSE Electricity League launch this afternoon, Fran Gavin announced that 27 league games were going to be shown this year, split between Air and RTE. That seems fair enough when you consider that there'll be 6 or 7 European games and 5 or 6 FAI Cup games added on to that. So we should see maybe a ballpark figure of maybe 40 League of Ireland games this season, do you reckon?
We got pretty good coverage last year. I mean, certainly we personally as Cork City, because of the fact that our title run went on for almost forever, we got great coverage. But it is good to see more games being covered. It's one of the key strategic ways we can get people more interested into the league. Like we were talking about the Bowes Rovers game, packed house on Friday. We'll talk about it later. But what an opportunity. What a potential opportunity to really show off the league in a good light. A good game between those two teams. Competitive game. It doesn't necessarily mean there has to be lots of goals, but just a good game of football in front of a packed house shows off, really, that, you know, that we do have a domestic league here, and it's well worth watching. For our games against Dundalk to be covered, home to Bowes, if we get off to a good start there, we could see a good crowd there. Obviously the Dundalk game is going to be a big crowd regardless, so it's good. Air's coverage, in my opinion, is miles above what RT are doing, not necessarily due to lack of want of those within the RT who do follow the League of Ireland, but probably due to a lack of resources. RT covered their RT, you know, I suppose RT kind of spread their blanket a lot further in terms of they do lots of GA, they're kind of into the rugby, they do lots more. So, but Ayr's, even we were talking just there about the Allianz Leagues, like Ayr have really made that their own. They've done a fantastic job. They do simulcast games across both channels in both leagues. They have a big proper studio set up, and Ayr seem to be really good at giving coverage proper resources and the proper sort of graphics and everything it needs in order to, it's the whole package with Ayr, whereas yeah. With RT it's the 5 minutes before a game we're live, we drag in kind of one of our usual pundits to have a word at half time, and then wrap it up 5 or 10 minutes after the game. And
yeah, like I think again at the launch earlier this afternoon, John Caulfield made the point that 9 minutes of sports news on RTE on Sunday night on the 9 o'clock news, 4 seconds went to domestic soccer in the shape of a President's Cup result on a slide. That was it in 9 minutes, when you had obviously the Winter Olympics and GA and English soccer and golf and hockey and tiddlywinks and everything else. 4 seconds in 9 minutes. I mean, that just really sums up, I don't know if it's RTE's attitude, but the fact that now that they've lost the Six Nations, they've lost a lot of their rights to a lot of other sports in the last couple of years to TV3 and Ayr. Like, you would imagine, or you would hope, you would have hoped that some of that might go towards the domestic league here. Again, that remains to be seen. Obviously, 3 games in the first 6 weeks is kind of nice enough to see. Hopefully, they continue that over the year. I wouldn't be too confident based on, as you say, last year, even starting it 10 minutes earlier than they usually do, because when the game starts, it's usually, or when cover starts, you say, okay, here we are, turn this cross, here's the teams, here's the commentary, here's halftime, here's the second half. Right, bang and gone. The one thing they have changed, actually, to be fair to them, is Soccer Republic is now on 7 o'clock on a Monday, every Monday. That changed middle of last year. It's continuing on for this year. So that is a positive. We'll move on to the annual competition that some people care about, the EA Sports Cup. We've got a bye in the first round. The first round draw for, I suppose, the Munster section, I should say. Ourselves and Limerick got byes in Pool 1, Waterford against UCC, and Wexford against Cove Ramblers. So naturally, Kev, we're going to get the winner of Wexford and Cove, which is going to be Wexford, because we haven't had that in a while.
Yeah, they seem to be a team that we like playing. Or indeed, UCC might beat Waterford's under-19s, and we might end up playing UCC again. Which actually might necessarily be a bad thing. But yeah, I suppose it's a competition that's very easily winnable. And we're talking about Waterford potentially going on to win it. So UCC, they'd have to get past them first. But yeah, it's a competition that it's very easy to get to advance into the further stages when it's regionalised to begin with. And UCC, last time they were in it, they managed to beat both Wexford and Cove Ramblers and only lost to Dundalk in the quarterfinals. So
yeah.
It's interesting. I like the way that we have a few non-league teams battered in, with the League Cup, because obviously we don't have enough league teams to make it up. So it's nice to see the odd on non-league team. And usually it's a competition that non-league teams kind of trying to generally try and make a bit of a shock in. So yeah. I don't think it's going to be a priority for Cork City, though, in any way, shape, or form this season.
Well, in our quintuple bid, we shall see how that goes on later in the season.
What do you mean quintuple? Sextuple?
Sextuple.
Okay. Are we not talking about the Champions League?
All right, Champions League and the Europa League, even though that's literally impossible. Around the league, as you mentioned, Waterford back in the Premier Division. It's always hard to tell how First Division winners will do in the Premier League because it just changes every year. Last year, Limerick stormed their way to the First Division title, had the title wrapped up with a month or two to go. Waterford, similar enough, but not as impressive last season. However, Limerick kind of got a reality check when they got promoted last year. Started off really well, but then the season collapsed halfway through and very nearly went down. Do you think that's going to kind of happen to Waterford, or if they noose?
No, I think I don't think the same thing will happen. I have them reasonably high up in my predictions. I think I have them fifth.
Yeah, we all have them fifth, except
Cuds hasn't heard, which is a classic Cuds. I think he predicted Limerick for the Champions League last year. So, I think Waterford won't, and I think the reason why Waterford won't is because they've signed a lot of Premier Division footballers. They have a team full of experienced Premier Division footballers, guys who know their way around this league, guys who know how to play at the top level, guys who have excelled at the top level, guys like Keary and Akinade, and even Marco Sullivan for us a couple of years ago. So I don't think so. I think Waterford are too strong to go down, and I also think that Limerick and Bray will be quite a way adrift of the rest of the league come the end of the season. So I think Waterford will be okay. I think personally, it might be different for you because you're living in Ashburn, but for somebody who lives in Cork, it's great to have Waterford and Limerick. It means four handy away trips over the course of the year, and also means for the club, it means four big away attendances too when they come to town, and big Munster derbies, very sellable games. So to have more local teams for us is a good thing, and I think generally just to have the league more spread out, to have more teams outside of Dublin is a good thing. It breaks the monotony of the kind of M50 ring, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, case in point, before Limerick were promoted last season, the last Munster derby per se would have been Cove Ramblers, I believe, in 2009 between Cork and Cove, or Limerick probably a couple of years after that, I should say, while we were in the First Division, for example. But, like, as I say, three Munster teams, that's a good bit of competition. It's more marketable. Obviously, there's no real major soccer team in Tipperary, Bartholomew's Town, but they're nowhere near it. So you have to, like, obviously, Cork City bring, with the family enclosure, for example, clubs travel from Kerry and from Tipperary. Then you get parents there as well. So you might just see a kind of a drip-drop effect into Limerick and to Waterford, hopefully, as well. We're going to look ahead to the first round of fixtures, obviously, Friday and Saturday. After the long, long winter, we're back in business. We're going to talk about City in a second, but there is one kind of major game. It's as much as people don't like to admit, it's still the biggest game in Irish football. Bohemians and Shamrock Rovers sold out 2 weeks in advance. Jody sold out. Away end is going to be packed. And as I say, it's televised, so it is a chance to put the league in a positive light. Obviously, Rovers under Stephen Bradley have been, I don't know, you could call them flops, you could call them successes. They haven't delivered any trophies, really, so that's kind of Rovers' bread and butter, is their trophies, and they haven't had any under Bradley. Some fans are hopeful this year that they can break into the top two again. I predicted that last week. For more about our season predictions, you can listen back on Mixcloud to last week's episode. This is going to be... I've just got it in my head that it's a live game. There's a huge amount of build-up. There's a sold-out crowd. It has nil all written all over, because that's how it goes in the League of Ireland when there's a big hype to a game. I really hope that that the headlines are on the pitch and they're not off the pitch. Somehow I doubt it. I really hope I'm wrong on that one. But, like, Kev, it's going to be a fantastic game to watch, at least.
Yeah, and I suppose I can completely understand your logic in terms of, that TV... Normally we saw when we went to Limerick that time at Thomond Park, and we played there probably one of the most forgettable football games in the history of the sport up in Thomond Park that day. But these two teams have had a history of having really cracking games against each other. We've seen a lot of late comebacks, we've seen a lot of late goals, a lot of late winners, a lot of upsets, teams winning in each other's back gardens. And you know, I just think it's a really good fixture. I hope there are headlines off the pitch in terms of just the support, in terms of the level of noise, and I hope that that comes across on the TV. I hope that you really get a sense of the atmosphere, that there's an enormous atmosphere and it's not drowned out by Jerk Hanning's voice. But it's going to be a fantastic opportunity for the league to advertise itself, and I think both clubs should do the most they can. I'm sure both Shamrock Rovers and Bowes Ultras are preparing displays, and I'm really looking forward to if I wasn't in Chicor myself, I'd definitely be watching it on the telly, but I'm looking forward to coming back and watching the highlights and seeing the kind of atmosphere at the ground.
Yeah, I'm just going to call you up on a prediction that you made last week. You weren't around to defend it, but you said that Stephen Bradley is going to be sacked in April, I think it was.
Correct.
That's a huge call. I can see it happening, but what was your kind of logic behind that? Because they do have an all right run of fixtures to start the season.
Yeah, it was interesting because I was hearing somebody who knows football very well, and knows the League of Ireland very well, speak about the Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers Cup semi-final.
Yeah.
Which I think went extra time. It was the replay. It went extra time. And they were saying that Rovers were all over Dundalk, that they were absolutely dominating. They were thrashing them. And then Bradley got involved with Chris Shields.
Yes.
And there was a bit of a melee on the touchline. And it all went very quickly downhill for Rovers. They ended up losing that game. Didn't get to the cup final. Bradley has in the past pretty much abused players on the sideline who have made mistakes due to a concussion. He's made very incendiary comments towards other managers in the league, and he seems to be a pretty of a petulant child. and I say that not because I'm trying to be funny. He actually harms his own team. Yeah. Like, Rovers, by all standards, should be, like, not, I wouldn't say leaps and bounds ahead, but they certainly have a team good enough that should be able to win the league. Like,
yeah,
they have a team that should be able to challenge Dundalk, and should have challenged Dundalk and Cork City for the last couple of years. They haven't done so, and I think one of the key reasons behind that is their lack of discipline. They cannot keep 10 players on the pitch. They seem to constantly have sendings off, stupid sendings offs as well. We see guys, you know, for mouthing off the referee, for petulantly slapping another player off the ball, for really stupid stuff. And I think that's one of the problems of their game. They can't seem to stamp out that ill discipline, and it really hurts them. And I think that comes from the behaviour of Bradley and how he approaches his players. And I think that Rovers are going to get off to a really rocky start. I think Bradley's going to find himself in hot water early on. He could get himself sent off to the stands. I wouldn't be surprised to see that happen. And I think come April, maybe not the start of April, I think that might be a little bit early, but certainly come the end of April, you have your first set of fixtures done. Rovers, I don't think, are going to be in a sort of position that they want to. And I think they're going to start. They're going to make that decision to see him go. I wouldn't be surprised to see one of the Rovers backroom staff promoted up to the manager, but I cannot see Stephen Bradley lasting after April. I just think his influence, he's a bad influence on his team, and I think he hurts his team more than he helps.
Interesting. Like, obviously the last two seasons they finished 21 points behind the eventual champions. Not acceptable. He's going to have to control that slight temper of his on Friday night when they do travel to Dalymount Park to kick off the league season. Strangely enough, all three of us have gone for the same result. We all think it's going to be a draw. I've already said I've gone for a 0-0. Cullum has gone for a 1-1. And you've gone for something that won't happen, I think I'm confident in saying.
Well, I went for 3-3 just because it's the opening game of the season. I'm feeling fancy free. I'm feeling positive. And I just thought, you know what, why not? I mean, they've done it before. High scoring draws aren't that uncommon in this fixture. So it's a bit of my optimism. I'm going with my heart, what my heart hopes, which is a high scoring draw. I've been a little bit more I've held back a little bit more in the other results, but definitely I think a three all draws is absolutely possible. You look at the sort of goal scoring players up front that these teams have, and they love scoring goals against each other. They score a lot of goals against each other, so why not?
You're going with your heart, not your wallet.
Exactly.
We are back for our first league broadcast of the season in Inchicore on Friday night. If you had asked me at halftime on Sunday what result would come out, I probably would have told you that we're going to draw. After that comeback, I can't see anything other than a City win. I'm gone for 3-1. I think that our firepower, like, yeah, St. Pat's have made some good defensive signings in the likes of Simon Madden, Kevin Toner, Mick Leahy. I don't think that's enough to stop Kieran Sadler and Graham Cummins. I've gone for 3-1. We've all gone for a City win. Cuds has gone for a 2-1 victory, narrow enough, but still, I'd say comfortable, if that makes sense. And you've also gone for a City win.
Yeah, I have. I suppose if we're going to go in more in depth into the game, I think we're going to start a very strong squad. Yep. I think that Beattie will probably come in at right back instead of Colin Horgan. I know he didn't play well in the first 45 minutes, and I think Johnny Seal probably just want to bleed him in a little bit more. He might have been a bit too much throwing him in at the deep end to be playing Dundalk at Oriel Park. Like I said, our front three look very, very dangerous. Pat's had a very bad season last season. I don't think it's going to be as bad this season, but I still don't think they're going to be anywhere near. I think they're going to be lower mid-table. There seems to be, this is just from an outsider looking in, there seems to be a real sense of complacency at Inchicore. A lot of the same guys being played every week. There hasn't been a huge, I know they've signed a few players, but like re-signing Ian Turner, how much is that realistically going to do if you're a football club? How much of an impact is he actually going to make? How much competition is there for places in reality? I can see Madden and Tomer having an effect, but certainly I think there's too much dead weight at that club, and I can see City comfortably. I have it down as 2-0, but I wouldn't be surprised if we were 2 up after an hour and scored another before the end.
Yeah, Dundalk at home to Bray Wanderers. That fixture last season caused a lot of controversy. Bray won at 4-2, I think it was, in the end. Potentially 3-1 after two penalties in the aftermath of Stephen Kenny's comments. I don't think it's going to go like that this year. I think Dundalk are wounded now from Sunday. Wounded animal at home in Oriel Park. Myself and Colin agree on a 3-0. You've gone for a 4-0. I don't think there needs to be much else said. Bray cleared of their match-fixing allegations last weekend. The investigation had been happening since the end of last season. I think there's not much else we said about a comfortable home win.
Yeah, comfortable home win all day. Bray, I think, are going to have really struggled this season. As I said in my predictions, I think they're going to be really down there. I can't see anything more than Dundalk winning comfortably. They were very good in the first half against us. I know they kind of took their foot off the pedal, but I think they have enough to comfortably beat to Bray. Our first home game of the season is next week against Waterford, but they start their league campaign at home to Derry. That should be an interesting one, Dave. Back at the RSC, back at the Premier Division, finally we will get to see what this Waterford team is like coming up against a Derry side, by all accounts, who have done reasonably well in the transfer window. They've lost McNamee and Barry, of course. How big a loss is that going to be there for them?
I think going forward, in particular, McNamee is going to be major. He was a driving force behind a lot of Derry's attacks, in the last few years. He was kind of that moment of magic producer. And, yeah, fair enough. They've also made some solid signings. Nicky Lowe, Rory Hale, Jamie McDonough, just to name three, but having lost McNamee, having lost Aaron Barry at the back, and against someone like Waterford, there will be a rake of positivity surrounding that game. They want to prove that they belong in the Premier Division. I've gone for a home win just, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's a draw. I've gone for 2-1, but I could easily see it being a 2-2 or a 1-1.
Yeah, I have it down as 1-1, I think. I think both sides will be happy enough to take a point from this game. Realistically, Derry, it's a long, long trip down to Waterford from Derry. One of the longest trips of the year, I think, in the league. And you know, it's a tough way to start your opening game. But I think they're building something down there in Derry. I think they'll take the 1-1. And I can't remember who they have at home the following. I think it might be Sligo, is it? Because that fixture was rearranged. So I think they're away to Sligo.
Yes.
The following week. And I think they could pick up points there. So I'd expect Derry to be up around the European places again this season.
Yeah. Colm's gone for a 2-0 home win. He agrees with me in the sense that Waterford will get off on a positive start. Last game of the weekend comes on Saturday at 7 o'clock in the Markets Field. Limerick at home to Sligo. Limerick have had a strange offseason, as we talked about last week. Sligo have been quite enough in doing their business, so we've all gone for away wins. Myself and Colin again agreeing on the score, which means we're both going to be completely wrong. We've gone for 2-0 away win. Kev, you go for a single goal win for Sligo as well. That might be a sneaky one for the game of the weekend, I think.
Yeah, it's going to be very competitive. I suppose I kind of wanted to call you out as well. Not call you out, I suppose I question you as well about, because it's something that I kind of, I wouldn't disagree with, shall we say. But Gerard Little, you think he's going to be gone pretty soon?
Yeah, Sligo second managers every year. That's all my logic was. Like, they made a net loss of 93,000, and that came out a couple of weeks ago, or last week, I should say. And a lot of that came from paying off Dave Robertson. Sligo, for a club that won, were quite successful up until 2 or 3 years ago. They won a lot of cups in a few years, and it's just questionable as to the strategy in this year. If they don't pick up points in the first few games, they won't want to be involved in a relegation scrap again, as they were for a lot of last season. So similar enough in your logic with Bradley, I think that a couple of poor results, Sligo like to sack managers, it's just what they do, and compared to the rest of the league, I think he's probably first for the chop.
Interesting, because they've done a lot of talk around Sligo about their kind of signings off season. There's a lot of noise coming out from up there, so interesting to see. Mm-hmm. We, as it is our first, our second episode of the season, but our first before the league campaign kicks off, we will be running a weekly rebel referendum. So it's a poll every week. We invite you to get involved, and we'll give out the results. This week, to begin with, we asked who will be Cork City's top scorer this year. Now, Dave, you seem to think it was Graham Cummins.
Yeah, I said for him to be top scorer. I've changed my mind since then. No, I haven't changed my mind. I still think he'll be our top scorer, but I have backed Kieran Sadd here at 25-1 to be in the top four top scorers. So I think Cummins gets us there with 19.
I also think Cummins will be top scorer for us as well, and that's what most of our followers on Twitter think. Cummins won the vote with 62%. As you said there, Kieran Sadlier, he's 24%. He's a far off second place. Behind him is Carl Shepherd with 14% of the vote, and Barry McNamee didn't get a single vote. He is more of an assist kind of player, though. Really, he's not really a big goal scorer per se, is he?
I hope he listens to this now, and this will just be played back to us at the end of the year when Barry McNamee scored 54 goals.
Well, if Barry McNamee scores 54 goals thanks to this podcast, I would be a very happy man.
Very happy boys we will be. So I think that's it for episode 2 of Rebel Yell for the 2018 season. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter at our presenters, at Rebel Radio CCFC on Facebook and on our Snapchat, and keep an eye on our YouTube channel as well, because Kev, I believe you have something coming during the week. Can't forget our handle, so you'll have to fill us in on that one.
It's alright, it'll be up over our social media anyway over the course of the week. It'll be on Thursday night, I think.
So until we put out our next episode, which will probably be next Thursday, reviewing the St. Pat's match, looking ahead to our first home game against Waterford and all the shenanigans that will happen in between, for Kevin Galvin, leaving you with the answer to this following question: if Cork City were a pancake topping, what would they be?
Lemon and sugar. Unconvincing, and not everybody likes it, but always gets the job done.
Excellent. For Kevin Galvin, for me, David Kent, we will see you next week.